Nothing tastes as good as a cup of Bahamian tea.
The views and opinion expressed in this podcast are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entity or organizations.
You are listening to the podcast Tea and Talk, presented to inform, educate, inspire, and encourage meaningful conversations on Bahamian arts and culture. My name is Robert Bain, dancer, teacher, choreographer, and someone who believes in the preservation of all things Bahamian. I am sitting down with persons of like mind to discuss the Bahamian perspective on the arts and the Bahamian way. Now, let's welcome our guest.
Well, welcome back to Tea and Talk. This is Robert Bain with another podcast. Today, we're going to continue with my discussion with Shanice Kemp. This is part two. This podcast is emanating from the Bahamas, one of the islands of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. We call it Nassau. We boast of 700 islands, and I think 30 of them are inhabited by beautiful people. And like I always say, the people are just as beautiful as the island, or the island is beautiful as the people. Now, you know, one of the reasons for this podcast, I like to remind my guests, and I noticed that the numbers are climbing, and persons are listening from around the world. Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning into Tea and Talk. But I always like to remind my listeners that the reason why this podcast was established is to become a platform for persons like myself, like the artists, so we can express ourselves. We can talk about the things that impede our development, or we can talk about the things that are just right, you know? And it's my hope that at the end of this podcast, those persons listening to it, if you're listening to it, you'll become much smarter. Before I continue, I'd like to thank Fred Ferguson. The music you hear playing underneath me as I speak was done by Fred Ferguson. And the music in the opening was done by Jason Ferguson. Thank you, guys. All right, so we're going to move right into our podcast, the part two of my discussion with Shanice Kemp. You know, Shanice, what is so interesting about this thing, and, you know, I don't want to preempt anything, but what is interesting, a lot of those persons out there that have studios, that town meeting on Tuesday, a lot of them are not going to show up. See, the thing about it, too, it gives us an opportunity. Well, since the university is taking this this direction, now, because I'm going to tell you right now, there ain't in this whole entire Bahamas, there's not a curriculum for dance. So now it pushes the point. Now we have to create that curriculum that's going to be stitched into the curriculum of the College of the Bahamas. They would say to us, I'm saying the College of the Bahamas, the University of the Bahamas. I apologize to you all, University of the Bahamas people. I know you're no longer College of the Bahamas. But there isn't a curriculum, and hopefully, I think it will. The whole idea of this will kind of perpetuate some positive outcome, and that's my hope. And the same thing, and talking about this program, of late, I started to say to you that the Bahamas government is now proposing a school of the arts here. It's quite interesting, actually. I know. I see that look on your face.
I mean, it's news to me, but I'd definitely love to hear more.
Well, quite frankly, I think it's politics, but I can say that. This is my podcast. I think it's politics. But, you know, but they are, that is their plan to establish a school for the arts. The sad thing is, I think, and they're doing that, but also what they have done over the past couple of years is close the only entity that existed for The National Dance School was established in 1976. That has been around, and it's been closed. The door has been closed now for the past 4 or 5 years. And so that's, they've thrown that in the dump now, and they want to start something else that they can throw in the dump soon again. This is my podcast. Say whatever I want. But that's the way I feel. And I wish them all the best with that. You know, go ahead.
You know, I didn't know that. But one, again, I'm in terms of the schools, I see some of them on social media. And for me, I feel as though, you know, everyone has the space, the right to express themselves, to go after things that they are passionate about, to carve a space where they may feel there's no space. However, with that is especially when you are engaging the youth and young children, with that is a responsibility and a sense of accountability for the information that you are giving and for the information that you truly know that you don't know. Now, before we all knew, myself included, we didn't know. Every single one of us has operated in a space of ignorance.
That's right.
And we still operate in a space of ignorance. Ignorance is just not knowing. But once you realize that you don't know something, it is imperative, it is your responsibility to go after the information. Now, here's where I still feel that the root of appreciation and knowledge, a parent just send their child, unless, you know, and this can be a little generalization, as there's many factors in place as it relates to, you know, financial, economic status, all of these things. However, you won't just see a parent send their child to someone who claims to be a pediatrician and not actually be a pediatrician, not have the credentials, not have the expertise, not have the track record. Right. You're not going, they're not going to just, send them to a track coach who has never ran before, has never participated beyond just a
local,
extracurricular, hobbyish, you know, space, but have had extensive training in that particular area. Like, they're going to seek out the best of the best, and they're going to seek out the best of the best with the responsibility that they have for their children in finding that individual that know what they're talking about. And I don't think that everyone has to have a because I understand that we have now moved in that direction, where, you know, MFAs, BFAs, PhDs, and so on and so forth. But there's a lot of artists that are that have had the experience, the physical embodied practice, as well as the the pedagogical space, where, you know, they may not have gone into higher education, or they may not have gained an MFA or a BFA, but it's comparable because of the years of practice that they've had, either touring in companies, the teachers that they've had, you know. But I feel as though, you know, with dance, that's not the case.
No.
Especially in speaking to many individuals that are aware of all of the different schools that are opening up. Like, what is the criteria for opening up a dance school?
Exactly.
What is the criteria?
Open a school, find a building, take two classes, learn plie, tendu, and teach a class.
And I've seen videos of photos and, you know, of young dancers. And the thing is they have, everyone has to start somewhere. So this is not a knock to the young artists and the dancers that are having a passion, but this is most definitely a call to action to the individuals that are teaching.
Yes. Well, you know,
you have to know, and if you yourself have not, like you can't just learn stuff from YouTube. You can't just, you know, you're talking about training a physical instrument. And I see photos of dancers and, you know, their alignment is poor. Their feet are circled. I see classes that are being taught and, you know, it's improper training.
I've seen it.
The lack of knowledge and education, and the lack of knowledge rather, in general, if the parents don't know, they don't know.
Some don't care.
I mean, you know, that may be it as well.
Babysitting. Yes, babysitting.
And, mm-hmm. You know, and so, you know, and I see, you know, individuals and stuff, you know, posting about competitions and stuff. You know, there's levels to this thing as well, I know. Mm-hmm. There's levels to it. These competitions, many of them are money-making practices. So you can go to a competition and your dancers and again, I'm not trying to, you know, knock these young kids or anything like that. And they can rack up, right? But what is the level of that competition? Is that competition where everybody gets a gold star? Because then you're posting photos of these dancers that, I mean, they're hips out of whack, feet out of whack, alignment poor, and then they got the gold star or whatever it is, right? But what they may not even be able to participate in some of the actual competitions that are feeder programs for some of the major companies in the world.
I know.
Feeder programs to the university program. So, I mean, so it's
a lot.
That's where I say
yeah.
the gap, the root is just a lack of knowledge.
Well, I think dance needs to be reestablished, and there needs to be some criteria put in place, and the authorities, people don't understand how important it is, because you can destroy a child, you can destroy a gift for improper training. You could destroy them physically. I've had the parents who come into my studio and they want to bring a 3-year-old, but they want the 3-year-old to come like 4 times a week. And I go like, listen to me, that child just got out of Pampers, man. And we have to be respectful to their growth and their bodies the way they are. And do you understand that? But at the other school, they was doing, I said, no, it don't happen here. We have to respect the way that child is learns. We have to respect the body development of that child's body. I had explained to a parent one time ago, I said,
and the mental capacity. 3-year-olds exactly. Are 30 to 40 minutes at max.
You might find but they don't do much. They after 15 minutes, 30 minutes, 30 probably minutes. They done.
That's it.
Yeah. You know, why am I child on, you know, but see, the thing about it, we have a process, a learning process that has to be undertaken. And that's going to be done, like people like yourself, if ever you decide to come back to the Bahamas, because we need you here. I am basically out of this game. I've been into it now for as long as I can remember. I don't know everything. I know some things. And I always say this country have not seen what I'm capable of doing as yet. But that's okay. It doesn't matter. There are other people that are coming in that's stronger with more knowledge. I'm prepared to move to the side. But it is time, and I'm hoping that at some point in time, persons like yourself, again through the programs that people hope to establish, you will be encouraged to want to come home. We kind of run in time, but I want to ask you a question. I know there's a lot to be said. Go ahead.
I just wanted to. I noted you had said that, you know, you're not sure if many of the individuals that are currently teaching, have schools or whatever, will be at this town hall meeting. That is definitely another space culturally, like in our society, that we just have to shift and change. And when I say that, I mean, you know, that would be a space where critical questions are asked, hard questions are asked, and potentially, you know, people being held to the fire as it relates to now being accountable for the fact that I am not where I need to be or should be in the role that I am currently holding. And again, before we have all reached to a certain level of expertise in whatever area of study that we are in and practicing, we have gone through, you know, the channels, the levels. And so we all have to start somewhere. That's number one. So I want to be very clear about that. However, you have to be open to receive the feedback and receive the help.
Absolutely.
I know people know that I'm out here and what I'm doing. And I know that I probably can do better at, you know, sharing what I'm doing and all of that stuff. I just do it. You know, but we don't do well with reaching out and saying, hey, I know that this is your area. I want to start this. Can you help me? What can you share? Or, hey, you know, can you come in to watch my class or to, you know, can you give me some feedback? Like that level of exchange, that level of camaraderie, that level of putting our egos aside, that level of this is about the work, this is about the children, this is about advancement, this is about
the future,
it is very much, for whatever reason, my school is over here, your school is over here, I'm doing this, I have X amount of children here. When you know that you should be outsourcing, because, I mean, have you studied dance long enough? Have you studied the genre of dance that you are teaching? Are you proficient in ballet at the level at which you are teaching it and beyond? So much so that you can actually not just spit out the word to say plié, the tendu. Can you physically do? Can you teach the proper way to do it in terms of it then leading up to, if you're teaching, just like in a regular school, if you're teaching at the preschool level, are you preparing those students at a level in which when they take whatever little exam they need to take to go into, you know, a primary school or whatever, if you're teaching at the primary school level, are you preparing them where they are truly prepared for high school, for that entrance exam or whatever it is? It's the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. And no teacher has it all. You can't teach everything.
No.
You can't. You know, and I feel like, you know, the versatility in that, it goes beyond you just taking some classes here and there, or even you studying, you know, on the island here for, you know, I did this and here and I did it and I did this dabble. And, no. Have you truly done your due diligence to be able to train these students, these kids?
Well, I'm going to say what Arthur Mitchell used to say. You cannot teach an arabesque unless you have performed it yourself.
Most definitely.
All right. You cannot, any of these things, you cannot, unless you've performed them, you can't teach them. You don't know what it feels like. You cannot teach point work unless you, you've done point work. I know you don't like point work, but
no, I love point work.
Oh, okay.
No, I love point work. But that is the truth.
Yeah,
it is the truth. I am currently, and the next thing is that, are you currently in a practice, regardless of the of where you are in your dance career, whatever, are you currently in a practice? And the practice does not always have to be, you know, because as dancers age and, you know, they go into more teaching or whatever, that's fine. But the practice, you have to be in some sort of practice, mm-hmm. an embodied practice, a pedagogical practice. Like, are you outsourcing information that's just not from YouTube mm-hmm. or TikTok or, you know, the what you see, whatever you could get. Like, are you in a practice? And many are not. And so you don't understand the kinesthetic anatomical mm-hmm. space mm-hmm. that dance not only holds, because you've not trained your facility in that way. I'm in a practice, physical practice every day.
Well, like a
Keith, I take ballet 2 to 3 times a week.
Good stuff. Like a Keith would say, what are you putting in your tool, in your toolbox?
And it's, you know, and it's not a dig. And I keep saying it's not a dig, it's not a this or whatever, because I know how we think. Mm-hmm. I know, and that mindset has kept us back for a long time. I know how we think, you know. And it's unfortunate, but I feel like Bahamians only recognize what Bahamians are doing when it is done on a level that they deem. But that's my number one thing. And so I feel as though, you know, the same level of that methodical approach to where you go to get your hair done and where you go to send your child to school and mm-hmm. the doctors that you, you know, send your child to, all of these things, it's the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think we really understand it like that, but we need to, at some point in time, put it into perspective. And hopefully at some point, we'll put it in some sort of perspective. But, tell me, what is next for Shanice Kemp? I know I've seen the wonderful photographs. I've seen some of this stuff. Well, visually, I mean, I remember you doing a performance some time ago that Bahamian should have seen. They didn't come, you know, the support wasn't as great, and they got an opportunity to see somebody fabulous. I know you're doing some awesome stuff. I talk to you and you're busy doing stuff. It's just sad that Bahamians don't really know the good things that you are doing. The fact that you are at a university teaching and you're still a performing artist and you're an excellent dancer. You're not just a dancer. You are a dancer, trained, and you are working, you know what is, when you're teaching in arabesque, you know what it is that you're teaching. Mm-hmm. You understand the pedagogy of what you are doing. You understand all the things that we have just discussed, kinesiology and all the wonderful things that people don't really think about when it comes to us, because they don't think that we are that deep, you know? Mm-hmm. But what's next for you? What are you doing now? Go ahead.
Like I mentioned earlier, I am I'm at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, and so I am actually going up for tenure mm-hmm. in September. So this summer I will be kind of getting my dossier together. But I'm also working on an evening length work entitled Spirit of Our Bones, that's going to be showed in October.
So tell me, now see, I the thing I always say about this program, Shanice, is that I say to people at the end of the day with Tea and Talk, you become much smarter. You understand some things. You understand things you didn't know. You find out about people that you didn't know. And so that's the wonderful thing about tea and talk, right? And so, you know, I'm talking with Shanice Camp, and this is, like I say, one of our dancers who's out there. And it's just sad that we don't honor the dancer out there that's representing the 242. There are some out there, you know. There are some of them who are born, bred, and dead right in the same little island, on the same island, the same country, you know. And we're talking about true Bahamians. So tell me about Shanice. Tell me what you've been doing. I know you've been doing some styles, some dance styles, some modern styles. I know you did something recently. I know you... I think you did something with Lantinette at some point, and you're doing this Fundala. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've pretty much studied everything. So, you know, because I say to my students all the time, because it was said to me that you have to, at this stage, you have to be versatile. Mm-hmm. So, and you have to have a command of multiple things. You may not be overly proficient in each thing, but you have to have a command of many things, and at a level that's going to be comparable with the individuals in the space that you are either, you know, you got a number on next to trying to get this job, whether it's your choreography, whatever it is, you have to have a certain level of expertise. And so with that said, you know, over the years I've studied ballet, your classical, you know, forms. I've studied ballet, modern, specifically Graham, Horton, Dunham. I've done Dunham. I've danced with the Dunham Company. I'm a master teacher of the Mufundala technique, which is a contemporary African technique. And that mm-hmm. technique stands on the shoulders of the Dunham and Pearl Primus techniques. Mm-hmm. I've done hip hop, you know, I apprenticed with Ronnie Harris. I've done mm-hmm. diaspora and movement. And one of the things that I am most proud of is that all of the companies that I have danced for, worked with, choreographed for, guest taught for, and have some relationship with, are all very different. Many of our repertory companies. And so what that means is that, you know, with the repertory companies, you got to be able to do it all. If a choreographer comes in and you got to put on a ballet shoe, you got to put on a ballet shoe. If you got to put on a lapa, you got to put on a lapa. If you mm-hmm. got to put on sneakers, mm-hmm. you got to know how to put on sneakers and be able to be proficient in the work that they're creating and they're choreographing. So I'm most proud that all of the companies that I work with are very different.
Yeah.
Very, very different. And I remember coming and once I switched my major, just becoming a sponge, realizing that what I did know, I knew well enough and was proficient enough in to be accepted into these programs, but there was a lot of gaps. I still had a lot of information that I needed to acquire, not just embodied in my embodied practice, you know, but theory, pedagogy, you know, and also an understanding of African and African American culture and the culture of whatever, you know, genre I was studying. So in being a sponge, I feel like it really catapulted me in the direction that have now afforded many opportunities for me over the years. And still, you know, many of the companies that I've danced with, I feel like I still can, you know, walk in and be a part of, mm-hmm. should there be, you know, space, or should I desire to do so. Mm-hmm. And it's not being the best in the room. It's being the best student in the room, mm-hmm. right? Making sure that no matter what level you attain, like, you are consistently learning, you're consistently growing, you're consistently opening up yourself to do that, to be able to say, there's more for me to learn. Like, there's more for me to know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, even as a professor now teaching students that are majoring and minoring in dance, this is from things. We rotate, but I'm teaching senior capstone. I've taught, you know, First Works, which is a choreographic based course. I've taught composition, repertory, mafundala, you know, all levels of contemporary. And this is at this level, not saying that everyone is aspiring to be, you know, a professor of dance or whatever, but at this level, you have to have a grasp of what you are teaching, more than just, you know, you are now developing the new choreographers, the emerging choreographers, the dancers, the studio directors, the, you know, dance therapists, the, you know, dance anthropologists, you are in these programs. And it does not start necessarily at the collegiate level. It starts at the ground level.
Yeah, absolutely. Very nice. Yeah. Well, my dear, I Dorothy should be proud of you, you know. Tell me about your parents. Who's your
parents? My parents.
Yes.
Craig Kemp and Dorothy Anderson. You know, I am so incredibly grateful to be their daughter.
Yeah. I could see.
I have always had the support of my parents, the emotional support, the financial support, the physical support, like always. And I know that had they known about, you know, summer intensives and, you know, exchange programs and different things in regards to dance, like they would have made the opportunity available for me to be a part of it. Nonetheless, in presenting my thoughts to them as a freshman going into my sophomore year, saying that, you know, I'm not sure if I want to do medicine anymore. I want to dance. I want to be a dance major. It wasn't met with resistance. It was met with encouragement. It was also met with logic, though, around, you know, because of that gap of not necessarily knowing and understanding a path forward in dance in the same way that they understood, you know, medicine and track and all of these other things, right? The logic was, well, you've done so much already with your medicine. What are some things that you could potentially continue to do to have something to fall back on? And so I considered physical therapy, occupational therapy, right? It made sense, but there was not a deterrent from what I wanted to do. There was support. It's always been support. And I'm so appreciative of it because it afforded me the opportunity to go after my dreams, even the dreams that I didn't even realize I had. But because they made space and made room for me to step into who I needed to be.
That's beautiful.
And have been present every step of the way, they have most definitely been the shoulders that I have stood and grew on, and I still stand on, and I am so proud to be an extension of them.
That's beautiful. That's well said. I hope that a lot of parents get to hear this podcast, you know. Shanice, I'm just going to ask you one more question. What do you have to say to the new dancers? I know you've said a lot already, and I might just be asking you to repeat yourself. But what do you say to the young, upcoming dancers and parents of kids who have a have that gift. I have a before you answer, there's a student that I have right now that I'm taking away this summer. I try to take them away as much as possible to Kevin Thomas in, in Memphis, because the child has that beautiful gift, and just like you, have a parent that supports and pushes, and just like your mom, educator, the parent is also an educator as well. But what would you give me some words, last words that you can offer?
For the parents, you know, I think I would encourage them to remain open. Really reflect on if you have a space that seems as if you are resisting something in regards to allowing your child to pursue dance or whatever, like really sit with that and think about where is this resistance coming from? Is it rooted in fear? As parents, one of the main things is, you know, you want to protect your child, you want to protect your child, you want to protect your child. You know, you don't want them to, you know, you want to guide them in the best way. But sometimes you have to also understand that, you know, the path that they have to travel or what is ordained for them through God may not be the path that you see for them. And if you are fearful that, you know, this may not be something that they'll be successful in or whatever it is, do your research. Do your own research. Seek out, you know, professionals that are doing it, that are, you know, whether they're Bahamian or not, you know, do your research, like educate yourself so that you can be a resource and a support for your child as they continue to figure it out. But I would encourage not to dim the light, because look at all of the wonderful, you know, artists and Bahamians that have stepped outside of what we feel cultural, what we've, you know, been groomed in certain ways to think is the norm or the main source of livelihood or the only way that one can seek success. Sydney Poitier being one of them. Right. Absolutely. You know, in terms of the arts, and I would just educate yourself and see how best you can support, provide opportunities for your child to be exposed to a different level of the arts. Keep the lines of communication and conversation open. And they will find their way. And I think sometimes you have to trust that what's in them will emerge in some way, shape, or form. And I would hope that you would want to be a part of cultivating that blossoming of their gift.
Absolutely. Well said.
And not hindering it.
Yeah.
Wow. And for the young artists, this is hard work. Dance is hard work. It is not for the faint of heart. It dance truly prepares you, I believe, for life. It is life lessons. There's a level of discipline and rigor that's connected to this work that shapes individuals in a way that I feel nothing else does. And artists are the ones, we are the ones that really keep this world going. When the pandemic hit, what did we have? We had art. Mm-hmm. We had to listen to music. Mm-hmm. We had to watch TV shows. We had to, you know, art was the thing that kept this world kind of moving during the pandemic. And so for the young kids, children, that young adults that are aspiring to be an artist, a dancer, a painter, a musician, like, do your homework. Be open, get ready to work. recognize your creativity and your gift, honor your gift, be honorable with your gift, be willing to share, and be willing to receive, and then be willing to give back when you have reached a level that may not be where you are at this moment.
Yes.
Mm. Both is inevitable.
Yeah.
That it's going to happen. So yeah, that would be my thoughts.
That's awesome. Well, Janice, we're going to have to do this again at some point in time, and hopefully you'll be home. But this has been awesome, man. This has been really, really nice. And I've been looking forward to talking to you. And you said some things, man, that got my brain like kind of spinning a little bit, because it's spot on. I'm very proud of you as a Bahamian. I am very proud of you. Like I see you from a distance. I do see you. But I know that you are not to be taken lightly. You are a dancer. You are a dancer. And, you know, Bahamians like to double up on things and say, true, true dancer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's a true, true dancer. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. all the things that she spoke about the time and hard work and all that sort of thing, and parents, all that stuff, that still stands true today. If you haven't already done so, man, you need to go and get my book. You need to go and get my book, Profiles of Bahamian Dance, The Dance and the Dancer. It's at Chapter 1 at the University of the Bahamas, or it's on at Logos Bookstores. That's in the Harbor Bay Plaza. If you want to reach out to me, you can write me at tandtalk.bahamas2023@gmail.com. That's T and Talk. That's the whole T. tandtalk.bahamas2023@gmail.com. If you want a copy of the book, hopefully this summer I'll be putting it on Amazon so you can order it from Amazon. All right. But Janice, I am proud of you, man. The whole Bahamas should be proud of you. And we need to honor you, man. I mean, you know, I'm just so for every Bahamian dancer out there. And you are a great example. You are a great example. You're an example that everybody should just strive to be like. I'm saying that with all my heart, you know. So
I appreciate it. I would be remiss, honestly, if I want to thank you for opening up this space and this forum for just conversation and for engagement. And you know, I have been told lately that I have to do a better at certain things. And so I will say I am good. No, I am excellent at what I do. And I want to take this opportunity really and truly, you know, I've already thanked my parents, but I want to thank Gabriella and I want to thank Mr. Carroll, because, you know, they gave me everything that they had.
Okay. Awesome.
They gave me everything that they had, and it was wrapped up in love, and it was wrapped up in encouragement, and it was, you know, wrapped in sweat and rigor. And I'm appreciative of the foundation that they laid in my dancing and in my training and in my career. And so I can say, yes, over the years, I have gained many mentors and teachers that I hold dear to my heart and that have pushed my scholarship and my technical advancement and my overall knowledge. But I will never forget dancing at the Dundas, dancing at Crystal Palace, Eurythmic Studio, Gabriella stretching my legs, mm-hmm. to wherever, Mr. Carroll telling me, you know, getting on me for whatever I needed to do, you know, and also pushing me to the forefront.
Very good. So I'm happy to hear that, and I'm sure they appreciate that, appreciate hearing that, and they've done a good job, you know. Anyhow, like I say, this podcast is emanating from Nassau, Bahamas, one of the islands of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. We boast of 700 islands. We have a population of just about 400,000 persons. And we have 30 islands that's inhabited, and we are beautiful people living on in a beautiful country, and we want to invite you to come down anytime you feel, yeah? You're listening to Tea and Talk, and I'm happy to say thank you, Shanice. You have a wonderful day, and
you're listening to the podcast, Tea and Talk.
The views and opinion expressed in this podcast are those of the hosts and guests, and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entity or organizations.